All right, so today I'm going to talk about generalized cycles. Of course, nowadays we think of these as algebraic cycles involved in higher K theory, but at least from the point of view of the classical subject of studying ordinary algebraic cycles, these are definitely a generalization of that sort of concept. So the first thing is that, so again, X is going to be our projective algebraic manifold. And you recall that one way in which we can formulate the Chow group is to think of it as a co-kernel of the following map. Take a co-kernel of a divisor map. So in this case, what I would do is say the following. You take a sum, let's say codimension V. V is irreducible, and X is equal to R minus 1. You look at the multiplicated group of the function field, okay, and you look at a divisor map. So you look at the co-kernel of this, and you take the divisor map here and map into the free abelian group of codimension R subvarieties of X, and that gives you the Chow group. So one way to think of this is perhaps to start thinking of everything from the point of view of building a complex. So for instance, here we have a group here, and then we have this situation here. And we have this divisor map. And then what we'd like to think of is something to the left. So trying to think of this whole thing in terms of looking at various homologies of a complex. So the way to think of this, at least one of the easiest ways, is to first just make a little bit of a digression and talk a little bit about Milner K theory, which is essentially the easiest part of K theory. And in this case, I'm only looking at the Milner K theory of a field, which I'll write in this form here. Okay. So the Milner K theory of a field is very easy to define. You define a tensor algebra. So I'm going to call it T of F. And T of F essentially is going to be given by a direct sum and zero of Tn of F. So Tn of F, I'm just going to check to see if I want to write as Tn or not, or maybe something a little more suggestive. Maybe I'll call it T of F times. Tn of F times. So what is this? Well, this is just a tensor product over z n times, okay? And, you know, by construction, well, by definition, this is taken to be the integers, t0, and t1 of f times is taken to be just f times. It's just a single tensor product itself. So then what we do is we form a two-sided ideal. So we're going to let R of F times, cannot see, okay. So? Okay, so, you know, this down. So then what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce what I call R of F times, and it's going to be another graded object, okay, which is going to be the two-sided ideal generated by terms of the form, I'll call it R of A, which is given by A tensor 1 minus A, where A is not equal to 1. So I'll just write it as a and m f times, but excluding the value 1. Okay? So this is also graded, and the Milner K theory of a field, call it K bullet m f, is by definition T of f times modulo R of f times. So because each of these is graded, we can write as a sum Km m of f. So perhaps one sort of bit of notation here. First of all, by definition, k naught of f is the integers. K1 of f is just f times. And k2 of f, the customary notation of this is it's really the group of symbols, okay? In other words, by symbol I mean the following. Normally you take a product, A tensor B, and we look at its image and we write it in this form, okay? So it's really a group of symbols form AB, where A and B belong to f times, modulo the various relations that are the result of modding out by this. And so that's basically what we call the Steinberg relations. So we just incorporate the multilinear aspect of each term, and so on, the bilinear aspect of each term in this particular case. So I won't bother writing down all these relations. So, and then one other bit of information here that would be useful before I go back to the cycle situation, and that is that suppose that we have that mu from f, or suppose we have this evaluation, discrete valuation. So in that case, O of F is going to be the discrete valuation ring, okay, for the corresponding, yeah. And let's say, with maximal ideal, I'll call it generated by pi, okay, so i.e. mu of pi, let's say, is equal to 1. So we can look at the residue field I'll call it script k here, which of course is just O of f modulo the yield generated by pi. And one of the things which comes about in this construction here is that there's always a map, which I'll call it T, which is, I can think of it as a generalized Tang symbol, which basically goes from, let's say, the amp K theory of the field F to the n minus 1, the only K theory of the residue field. Maybe I should call this K of nu. So, for example, just to give a couple examples here. So, you can always write F times as being the units times pi to any given power, okay? And so, for example, if you have A belonging to F times, which is the same thing as K1 M of F, well, what does that tell you? And while we're at it, let's also, not just A, let's say A and B, okay? So let's write, let's say A is being A naught times pi to the I, and let's say B is equal to B naught times pi to the J, okay? So in this case, if you take T of A, by definition, that's just going to be I. So that gives an example of this in the case when n is 1. So in the case of when n is 2, then this takes the following form. Okay, this would be formula here is going to be minus 1 the I times J times, call it A naught to the power J over B naught to the power I. Now I put a bar in front saying this is the value inside the residue field, okay? But that's easily seen to be the same thing as minus 1 to the I times J times A to the power J over B to the power I. And that, you can take the class of this, okay, belonging to K of nu times, okay, which is precisely K1 of K of nu. All right, so that's two examples, and in general, there's a formula for the Hyrtain symbol. Okay, why is that of interest? Well, let's go back to here. Now, one way of thinking about this part here is that you can think of this as direct sum code mansion V and X is equal to R of K naught M C of V. So a copy of the integers for each irreducible component, okay? And you can also view this as a sheaf as well, not just as a global sec, you know, an object living on X, but an object defined on Zariski open subsets of X as well in a natural way. What about this? Well, this is a direct sum. Now, codimension V and X is equal to R minus 1 of K1 M of C of V times. And so here, your tame symbol in this case is just your divisor map, which is somewhat analogous to what we have here. So what are the valuations? Well, the valuations, there's more than one valuation. It's order vanishing of a given rational function, the order of a zero or pole, I should say, of a given rational function along a subvariety of codimension 1. So that gives you the nature of these maps. Now, of course, we can fit something on the left here. Okay, so what do we have here? Well, this would be the codimension V, and X is equal to R minus 2. Well, the natural thing to put here is K2 M of CV, and so on. Okay, so we can start building a complex, and again, this is the classical tame symbol, okay? And the classical tame symbol, let's just write that out. Okay, so what would that look like? Well, you're looking at a series of valuations. So, let me do this. So, for example, if you take f and g belonging to the function field like this, okay, then you could talk about the tame symbol of f and g as being a sum, okay, where you can say the codimension d and v is equal to 1, and so you have minus 1 the order of vanishing of a polar zero of F along D times the order of vanishing of zero pole of G along D. And then you look at f to the order of vanishing of g divided by g to the order of vanishing of f, and you restrict this to the generic point of d, and that's going to be an element of the function field of d. So that would be the tame symbol in this case. So in other words, it's involving a sum of valuations. This just deals with one discrete valuation, but involves a sum of valuations. And that's how we build up a complex here. So we can keep going, and in fact, as I mentioned, you can do this on the level of sheaves. So you can sheafify everything. Why restrict to just x? You can restrict to any Zariski open subset of x, and of course get a corresponding complex as well. And so what we want to do is we want to create something at the very end, okay, that becomes the beginning of this complex. So the way to do that is the following. So we want to introduce, let's call it sheaf of K groups. And I should say this would be Milner K groups. So what you start off with is the following. You want to find a Milner sheaf. And the way to do that is to work with the structure sheaf of regular functions on x. So what we're doing here is, well, this is going to correspond to the units in the structure sheaf, tensored r times, okay, modulo a certain subgroup, okay, which is going to be, let me see if I can write it out carefully here. Okay, let's say modulo what I'm going to call J here, where J corresponds to the following. It's going to be the subsheaf of the tensor product involving terms of the form tau 1 up to, let's say, tau r, where tau I plus tau j is equal to 1 for some I not equal to j. So that sort of thing here. So you do the same thing that you do in the case over a field. And so if you do this, what you end up with is a complex of the following type. I think I can work with this. So the first thing you have is you have this KRX of M. And now you have an inclusion, okay, of the sheaf of regular functions inside the function field of X, the rational function field. So you map this to KRM of T of X, and then you go to the direct sum, codimension V, and X is equal to 1 of KR minus 1 M of C of V. Keep going until you're down to the direct sum, codimension V and X is equal to R minus 2, K2 M C of V, direct sum, codimension V and X equals R minus 1, K1, M of C of X, and then you go to direct sum, codimension V and X is equal to R, K0, M of C of V. Sorry, this is not X, this is C of V. Okay? Now, the basic non-trivial result, which is due to a number of people, I think originally Gabber might have been one of the architects, is that on the level of sheaves, this map is injective. That follows from some recent results of, I think, Chris, I can't remember exactly, but this is a resolution on the level of sheaves of this sheaf here. And very same time, for very, I would say, obvious reasons, this is a flask resolution. In other words, it implies that every one of these objects here as sheaves are acyclic. So what that tells you is the following. The Zariski cohomology, let's say R of X, KR, X of M, is computed in terms of the cohomology of this complex. Okay? So the corresponding take of the gamma will be global sections of this complex. Well, if you do that, what you're doing is you're treating these now, okay, as global objects living on X, okay? So, by very definition, this could be identified with the R of Chow group of X, because it's precisely the global sections, which is the free abelian group. Yeah. And this is going to be the divisor map here. So that gives you the Chow group. So now I'm going to give you an abridged definition of higher cycle groups. The definition here is that for M bigger than or equal to 0 and less than or equal to 2, okay, we define Chow R of XM to be the Zariski cohomology R minus M of X KR X of M. Now, notice here I'm restricting the value of M. And the reason for this is because the objects on the left-hand side are essentially the higher Chow groups of block, and they're defined for all R and M. I mean, all non-negative. And the trouble is that this right-hand side term really only calculates a certain graded cone of Vaux filtration on this in general. And for M within the particular range here, the cone of Vaux piece is precisely this term itself. In other words, it's called pure cone of Vaux. But in general, this is not the same for M at least 3. They're different objects. So that's the reason why the definition is abridged, because it doesn't include all possible cases. So let's give some examples. Right here. So the first example is the somewhat obvious one. Chow R of X0 is just equal to Chow R of X. So nothing to be said here. So in other words, this is precisely CR of X modulo those which are rational equivalent to 0. So the second example here is look at Chow R of X1. So one can think of this group in the following form. Well, the representatives would be of the following type, the sum codimension V in x equals r minus 1. Let me write this as pairs of the form. Let me call this V alpha, okay? And this is I'll write it this way. Write as the form finite sums of the form summation over alpha F alpha V alpha. I'll write it this way, where the codimension V alpha in X is equal to R minus 1. F alpha belongs to the function field, multiplicative group of the function field, and the sum of divisors of F alpha along V alpha is equal to 0 in X, let's say in ZR of X. Modulo the image of a tame symbol. Okay, so that would give you an example, I mean, the description of this group. So let's look at some explicit example situation here. So here's a little example to illustrate this. Suppose you look at, let's say, x is equal to p2, and then I want to consider, call it Lj, so p2 will contain homogeneous coordinates, c0, z1, and z2. So Lj is just going to be the zero set of zj. So we look at a line here. So what I want to do is I want to consider now three of those lines. Okay, so let's say this would be L0, this would be L1, and this would be L2. So what would this point here be? I'll call this P0. P0 would be given by, actually maybe I want to call this, I have to do it this way. P0. Well, this point here, let me call this, P, Q, and R. I know I'm probably do better notation, but this point here would be 0, 0, 1. This point here would be 1, 0, 0. And this point here would be 0, 1, 0. Okay? So, living on this, each of these lines, is you have an Fj where, let's say, the divisor of F0 is going to be, let's say, P minus Q. The divisor of F1 is equal to R minus P, and the divisor of F2 is going to be Q minus R, okay? So that means that this J equals 0 to 2 of Fj, Lj belongs to, these represents the class in P2, 1, okay? That'd be an example. Another example, a little more subtle, would be the following. So you notice here that the luxury here is that you're dealing with copies of P1, where any two points are rational equivalent, so it's divisor of a rational function. So another example would be this. So I'll call this first one here, second one. So we'll assume here that C is, let's say, a nodal rational curve. With normalization, call it C tilde. Okay. So here we have a situation of C being a nodal curve here. So we have this point here. Let me call this point P. And upstairs, we have C tilde, which is a resolution of that, and living over P would be, let's say, Q and R. But the point is that C tilde is isomorphic to P1. So then what you can do is you can look at an F tilde belonging to the function field of C tilde times. Now, the function field of C tilde is the same thing as the function field of C, because they're birational. Okay? So, the divisor of F, F tilde, is going to be, let's say, Q minus R. But F will get associated to a corresponding, F tilde gets a corresponding F in this function field here. And the divisor of F in this case is just equal to zero because they live over the same point. So in that case, if this is, let's say, contained in some X here, which is a surface, let's say, then we have that F comma C again determines a cycle in here. Okay, so here we just construct with a single irreducible nodal rational curve. A good exercise here is to show that this cycle here is not zero. In fact, the way you can do that is you can restrict to, you can take a line, a general line cutting these, this thing, and you restrict it, you'll find out that this is a two torsion class lying inside here. So it's definitely not zero. So finally, the final example here, well, maybe I can fit it in this part here, class example 3, is that you're looking at CHR of X, 2, okay? And this is going to be generated by symbols, okay? So call it finite product, let's say, the form F alpha G alpha on a V alpha here. Let's say write it this way. Take products of this type, okay, which go to zero under the tame symbol. Modulo the image of a higher tame symbol. And I should say here codimension V alpha and X is going to be R minus 2 minus the image of a higher tame symbol. Okay, so this gives you now a description of the higher cycle groups that are of interest in these lectures. So let me just give you a summary of what we're trying to do here. So recall yesterday that what I was interested in doing was to talk about what I call a regulator from a higher cycle group, which I now define, at least in the restricted range that we're talking about here, to an object which I call Deligne cohomology. So we've already defined this. So the next step is to explain this. And in this case, where A is going to be a subring of the reals, and where the twisting here, the tape twist, is just 2 pi I power R times A, which plays a role in a weight filtration in, or a weighted approach to Hodge theory. Well, the definition of Deligne cohomology requires some other machinery. And so what I'm going to do here is to digress slightly to talk about, a particular kind of spectral sequence construction called hypercohomology. There are a number of ways of defining hypercohomology. You can start within a restricted situation, and then you work your way out into a more general situation from the various definitions. So hypercohomology, in a sense, is essentially a sheathed version of the cohomology of a double complex. You take a double complex, you form associated single complex, and you take the cohomology of that, and if you do that on a level of sheaves, you get hypercohomology. The business of spectral sequences is in the following way. If you have a short exact sequence of complexes, then knowing the cohomology of two of the complexes will tell you something about the cohomology of the third. In a sense, spectral sequences is a generalization of that, where you look at a given cohomology and you break it up into graded pieces according to a filtration, and those graded pieces are described by some sort of limiting term. It's called a convergence term or E-infinity term of a spectral sequence. So in more concrete terms, what I'm going to do is the following. So the setting here is that we're going to have a complex of sheaves. And to make life easier here, I'm going to assume that the sheaves are indexed non-negatively. So you have a complex of sheaves. So let me write as S0, S1, S2. These could be sheaves of abelian groups. And this could be a complex of sheaves over, let's say, a projective algebraic manifold. That would be good enough. And then the other sort of ingredient that one needs is a notion of a check complex. So I'll assume that you've seen all this, but with respect to an open cover, let's say in the strong topology, that's typically what I'm interested in here, so the analytic topology on X is what I'd be mostly interested in, but you can do this with respect to any reasonable topology. So with respect to an open cover, I'll call it A on X, one has the notion of the Q check complex with values in the sheaf Sj. So what you could do here is construct a double complex. So you have, for example, the check boundary operator or co-boundary operator, which takes this to CQ plus 1 ASJ. So you have essentially a double complex. So what is a double complex? Well, the double complex is made up of two differentials. So what you have here is C bullet A S bullet, okay, different bullets here. And with that, you have differentials either horizontally, you can make these vertical, so call it delta, okay, and so you end up with this double complex of abelian groups. And so then what you want to do is you want to form a single complex out of that. So what we can do here is we can put X, or let's say put script M bullet to be the following. You take the direct sum, I plus J is equal to bullet, okay, of CI A S J. And I think this is falling off now. These aren't explosives, I promise. Okay. So, but then when you have a double complex, you would also associate a single complex with a total differential. Okay? And notice here I put plus or minus because all I want to do is arrange it so that d squared is equal to zero. So then, basic definition here is that the case hypercohomology of this complex of sheaves is by definition the following. Well, first of all, when you're dealing with something involving check cohomology, you take a refinement over open covers. So that goes without mentioning. But apart from that, what you're doing is you're taking the cohomology of MBO, K cohomology. And that is what hypercohomology is in this context. Now, as I mentioned before, there are ways of computing hypercohomology from the notion of spectral sequences. And what spectral sequences try to do is they filter a double complex. And there are a number of ways you can filter a double complex. You could, for example, filter it in this direction involving the first bullet. Say this bullet should be bigger than or equal to something, and that will give you a filtration. Or the second part here. This bullet would be bigger or equal to something, and that will give you a filtration of a sum complex. And either of those routes will lead to ways of describing certain graded pieces of this object here. And those graded pieces tell you an awful lot about this object. And the point is that we can approximate those graded pieces by spectral sequence terms, we'll call it ER, where when R goes to infinity, in fact, they become the graded pieces in the end. So let me just say that to make it a little bit sort of more digestible, I'll say the following. Is that so basically, the hypercohomology here can be computed, okay? In terms of what's called Grothendieck's two two spectral sequences associated to a double complex. So Grundig spectral sequences, I'll write it this way, SSS. So in other words, there's various approximations to graded terms, and it's important to actually say something about this because it'll tell you another story about the nature of hypercohomology. One term would be a graded P term of an HP plus Q. So you would normally think here that K is going to be P plus Q, and you're looking at a graded P term of this. And it would involve the following. You take the check cohomology of X, where the corresponding sheath is the D cohomology, I mean the Q cohomology of the complex of sheaths. You take the cohomology on the sheath level, okay, of S bullet. So here's an approximation to a graded term, and if you get what's called degeneration, then this becomes a graded P term of the hypercohomology HK. Another term is what I'll call E2PQ double prime, and this involved with a different grading, which either you grade in terms of this or in terms of this bullet here, and it takes the following form. You take the D cohomology now, P level, the P cohomology of differential D, of the check cohomology, Q, of X, S bullet. So you take all the check cohomologies of the S's, and then you compute the P cohomology when bullet is at P. Now, each of these tells a story. So what does the story really mean? Well, here's an example of the power of this kind of machinery. Here's a basic definition. A morphism of complexes of sheaves, let me call it K bullet, H to S bullet, is called a quasi-isomorphism . Maybe what I'm going to do is, if you don't mind here, I'm going to, it doesn't matter which way I do this, but I just want to do it this way. Okay. Call the quasi-isomorphism if H induces an isomorphism on the level of cohomologies. Okay? So there's an obvious corollary here. Corollary one, okay? By the first spectral sequence, E prime, okay, you notice that this only depends on the cohomology, okay, of the sheaves. We have that HK of S bullet is isomorphic to HK of kappa bullet. Call it kappa, okay. That's the first thing. The second thing is the following. Corollary two. Let us further assume that kappa bullet is acyclic. In other words, the higher check cohomologies, HQ check of the sheaves vanish for Q bigger than zero. Okay, so let's assume it's acyclic. Then, by the second spectral sequence, everything vanishes here except when Q is zero. Okay? So that tells you that the K-th hypercohomology of S. Bullitt is really the K-th cohomology of the global sections of this. That tells you an explicit way of calculating hypercohomology. So then you could probably define hypercohomology this way. You could start off with your complex here, and then take any other complex which is quasi-isomorphic and acyclic. And then you can say that the hypercohomology of this is precisely, by definition, this. And that would do it. And then there's another way you could probably think of it. You could, if you'd like, depending on how you want to do this, you can construct, let's say, injective resolutions of each of these and try and form a double complex. So that would give you a double complex of acyclic sheaves. And then you can play the game out. You take the single complex associated with this complex of sheaves and show by, again, a spectral sequence argument that that single complex of sheaves becomes an acyclic complex quasi-isomorphic to this one. And then, again, you can calculate the cohomology, and that will give you the hypercohomology of S. Bullitt. Okay, so let me give you some examples of the power of this. Suppose you take the complex like this, okay, on X. This is in the strong, the analytic topology on X. Well, this is quasi-isomorphic. So let me write it this way, to the complex of holomorphic differentials on X. This is the holomorphic Poincaré lemma. And then what you could do is, this is differential forms, okay? This is also quasi-isomorphic to the C-infinity complex valued differential forms. But this is acyclic, okay? So what does that tell you? It tells you that the K-th hypercohomology, for example, the first complex, is nothing more than the K-th cohomology of X, if you sort of unravel that, okay? And that's the same thing as the K-th hypercohomology of this complex here. And what is this? Well, by what I said here, because you have an acyclic complex, this is precisely the K-th Jerome cohomology of X with complex coefficients. Okay? So you get the abstract Jerome isomorphism theorem coming from this. But here's something else that you could play around with. The last two complexes have natural subcomplexes given by Hodge filtration. So for example, so this part here is not only, this quasi-isomorphism here not only occurs, but is what is called a filtered quasi-isomorphism. Meaning the following. I can start with a given level or degree of holomorphicity, okay? So this have a string of zeros, and then all of a sudden the first term after zeros is going to be the holomorphic R forms. And for this, I can look at a Hodge filtration involving at least R holomorphic differentials, okay? Again, you have a quasi-isomorphism here. And the end result is the following. This involves a little bit of work working with other spectral sequences called the Hodge to Deron spectral sequence, but this is isomorphic to the kth hypercohomology of this filtered complex here, and this can be naturally identified with Yarov Hodge filtration of Deron cohomology. Okay, so I'm running out of time, so let me now give you just one definition, and then next day I'll pick up on this. It's called the Wien complex. So what we're going to do is we're going to define, call it A D of R, was given by this complex. You take the twisted ring and then map it to O of X, omega 1 of X, all the way up to omega R minus 1 of X. This complex here. Okay? This part here, I simply call omega bullet less than R of X. So, the isolene cohomology X with coefficients and R is taken to be, by definition, the ith hypercohomology of this complex. Okay. So more on that next day.